Welcome to My Life as a Landlord, where we educate curious U.S. and Canadian landlords, answer rental questions, and clear up confusions about all things housing. If you're looking for some landlord education, interesting guests, and awkward conversations, you've come to the right show. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury. This is My Life as a Landlord. Welcome to it. Well, hello there. Thanks for joining me on today's podcast. I am Dr. Jen, and I'm so excited for you joining me today. I know many of you are frustrated with your insurance coverages, and there's so many questions, whether you are on the Canadian side or in the U.S. side or both. I have on the show with me today an amazing intellect who is a great asset to me, especially during the last few years of our providing housing in the U.S. side. I'm proud to have you on the show today, insurance agent Jamie Peacock. Welcome, Jamie.
Hey, good morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for joining me. So let's start at the beginning, Jamie. You and I have worked together for years, and the listeners want to know who you are. Who are you?
So from the beginning, well, all right, Jamie Peacock. I grew up in good old Cleveland, Ohio. I'm a product of the Midwest. I started my insurance career back in 2006, and I worked in that market for a while. Moved to Hawaii in 2009, owned and operated a service business, and then took the downtime during the pandemic to transfer my licenses and revamp my insurance career. So it's been a while, but I'm been long time out of the other business and full time back in insurance. So going on my, I want to say my 10th or 11th year in the insurance industry, and oh boy, is it always changing.
Well, you and I've worked together on Maui, building housing on Maui. Where all can you write policies at, just in Hawaii?
So I'm licensed in multiple states, but being an agent that's domiciled here in Hawaii, the markets that I have access to here that I'm contracted with, they only want to do business here because they understand here. So I do have out-of-state licenses for some of my business clients. So Ohio, Virginia, Arizona, California, but none of the markets that I work with here will write policies there. So real simply, I can handle insurance needs in Hawaii until I find a magic market that wants to do stuff for me all over the country, which isn't going to happen.
Right. Well, let's talk a bit about the goings on in the insurance world. You know, I named this episode the U.S. insurance roller coaster, because it seems a bit with all of the disasters that are going on in the world. Can you give us an overall industry update on the insurance industry, especially in the U.S., right? I've got Canadian insurers, but tell us about the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was reading an article, and the insurance industry counts on, according to the data I was looking at, an average of 6 to 8 natural disasters per year. At least that was industry standard. Give you an example. Last year, there was 28 recorded natural disasters. Okay. So in just like real estate or just like the commodities market, insurance is a marketplace with supply and demand. There's so much available and there's so much need for it. Well, right now, what we're seeing due to all these increased natural disasters, let me talk about reinsurance. Reinsurance is the insurance that insurance companies buy to protect their assets. Give you an example. Let's say that a quality insurer in the state of Colorado collects $300 million in premium per year. Okay. That does not mean they only have the capacity to pay $300 million in claims. They then turn over some of that premium to a larger group of insurance companies called reinsurers to protect their policyholders against catastrophic losses. So let's say there's a $1 billion wildfire in Colorado. Okay, but that company only collected $300 million. They have reinsurance to cover those losses. Mm. So the cost of reinsurance, which is the insurance companies buy, is going up. no different than your local grocery store passing on the higher shipping costs to your bottle of ketchup or your commoditized goods on the shelf. So the insurance companies that, let's say they were charging $1,000 for a policy last year, and this year it's $1,500, their margins are essentially the same, but they have to pass on more of that premium to the higher cost of reinsurance, depending on the area of the country you're in.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Wow. That's a lot more disasters than predicted. And so that's, I mean, everybody knows that all the costs of everything are going up, but for insurance wise, it just seems that these more disasters are causing more insurance increases as well. But let's talk about insurance specifically for landlords and tenants. I know there's, you know, the podcast is My Life as a Landlord. And so there's a lot of landlords listening, and there's landlord coverage, and then there's renter's insurance. And there's always this question of what covers what. Can you untangle that for us?
That's a great question. So pretend you're a landlord, which I know that you are, and you know, most of the listeners are going to be, okay. The renter's policy is going to be the policy that the actual tenant buys, okay? There's three types of homeowner's policies. There's a homeowner, there's an actual homeowner's policy, but these cover primary residents, okay? So let's say you own a home and that's your primary residence, you need a homeowner's. Let's say you own a condo, that's your primary residence, you need an HO6 condo policy. You need a renter's policy because you don't own the condo or the home, you're just a tenant, you need an HO4 renter's policy. Those protect the owner or the individual personally and cover their stuff and then also the house and their belongings. Once you get into the landlord realm, you switch over to dwelling fire policies, or in some markets, if you're renting out your condo, you would still have an HO6 policy, but you would just need to make sure that you had rental to others endorsed onto your condo policy. So here in Hawaii, right, I put a rental to others endorsement that covers them for vacation renting and long-term renting. So both situations of being a landlord. Let's say that a landlord owns a house in Utah or Ohio. They own a single family home. It's not their primary residence, and they're going to be renting it out long-term to a family or an individual. They need a dwelling fire policy. That is a landlord's policy. It covers the structure and it covers the liability of the landlord having tenants in the house, okay? But unless we endorse that policy or change, in case people are wondering what's an endorsement, that's a change, either adding or deleting coverage, then typically there's no coverage for stuff. So as a general rule, when I write a dwelling fire policy, I put about $25,000 for contents on there, assuming it's an empty house, and that'll cover the appliances and maybe a lawnmower in the garage or just some loose items. But the stuff needs covered by the tenant. There's no coverage for the tenant's stuff by the landlord's policy.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's go down into that subject a little bit further, and let's talk about normal wear and tear versus willful damage. And, you know, I've got several episodes for the listeners that talk about this, that talk about wear and tear, hard wear and tear, willful damage and terminology and all kinds of different things. But from an insurance perspective, let's talk about really hard wear and tear use damage versus willful damage on both how the landlord insurance looks at it and how the tenant insurance looks at it. You know, this comes up frequently in the Facebook groups and these discussions. How does insurance look at this?
So as we know, every state has their different statutes, right? So to keep it simple, we'll just say that the landlord collects first month's rent plus deposit. And let's say the rent's $2,500, okay? So that means you have $2,500 to cover, you know, a damage or cleaning deposit, right? If you have a good tenant that pays their rent, they live there for a year, year and a half, maybe they have dogs, maybe they have kids, or maybe they just aren't the cleanest tenant, right? Hey, the carpet's dirty, we get it cleaned. Hey, the floors are dirty, right? So normal wear and tear just the comings and goings of the tenant. It's not really covered by insurance, okay? But say that tenant on the way out decides to slam some, you know, bang some holes in the walls, destroy the toilet with a sledgehammer, or do something that is, you know, vandalism in nature. That is covered. I mean, A, it's criminal, right? So
right.
If I'm the landlord, I would call the police if you can find this person. But it's a covered cause of loss. I mean, vandalism is covered. And if they do something to damage the property on the way out the door, that's significant. Other than wear and tear, that would be covered by a landlord's policy.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And we had talked a little bit more, and you mentioned it, saying, you know, if a landlord is allowing tenants with dogs and children and, you know, a lot of occupants and a lot of wear and tear, and they're in for, you know, some amount of time, not, you know, 6 months, let's say it's a couple years.
Right.
And so when they depart, then the floors are worn, or the, you know, there's scratches in the drywall and it's dirty, that kind of stuff. It really doesn't seem like it's willful damage. It is really normal wear and tear. And so that would be taken out of the deposit potentially, right? It depends on your local area on how that's all done. But
yeah, and I've seen in our market, right, I've seen pet deposits. So how about, let's say there is no extra damage. Let's say that Grandma Joe has a little Yorkie, right?
Right.
But she lives in there for 3 years, and the new tenant who has a right to move into a clean place is allergic to dogs, right? So you can add a dog deposit on there.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can provide that extra level of cleaning or sanitation, or, you know, take those extra steps to make sure that your place is in tip-top shape once, you know, Grandma Joe or whoever it is moves out of the property.
Right. Well, and it's really interesting because the same questions keep coming up again and again in the Facebook groups and the landlord forums, whether you're on the US side, I see it from Canadian landlords as well, saying, you know, number one, how do I get my tenant out? Which depends, you know, the eviction process depends on where they are. And then two, how do I get my money? Whether it's, you got to go to, you know, either an arbitrator or you go to court or small claims or any of that. And it's interesting how you're discerning between just normal wear and tear, and they quote unquote trash the place. And so this intentional damage part can be excluded, but some, you're saying, I've talked and saying sometimes this intentional damage, it's criminal, but you could also submit an insurance claim. Sometimes that doesn't make sense for a landlord to submit an insurance claim.
Okay. So going back to the damage,
mm-hmm.
Let's say that the tenant moves out and the tenant really is the one that trashed the place.
Okay.
But depending on your market, a group of vagrants or squatters sees the U-Haul truck and the good tenant is moving out, and the word gets out and some teenage kids decide to party in the place and they vandalize the place or something like that, right? That would be covered. So assume there's no proof and the tenant really did it. Whether it's the tenant or the teenage kids, the bottom line, there was direct physical damage that was significant enough to involve an insurer. And I'll get to your question next.
Sure.
But if there's major damage, then, you know, if they need to turn a claim in. Now, to your next question, hey, should I or shouldn't I turn a claim in? We know that being in the property management, real estate, or landlord business, if you're going to rent, there's pluses and there's minuses, right?
Mm-hmm.
The minuses are the tenants may not treat the place the way that we would treat our own stuff.
Right.
Or they have a different standard of living than we do, or a different standard of cleanliness, right? Hopefully everybody on the call knows that going into this, and I'm sure they do, right?
Right.
But insurance, and this is my opinion, especially in this market, right? I talked at the beginning of the podcast, we are in the hardest of hard insurance markets, okay? So anything you can do to avoid turning claims in, reason being, when you turn a claim in to any insurer, your claim is going to show up on your CLUE report, C-L-U-E. That stands for Comprehensive Loss Underwriting Exchange. This is a database that all insurers share. So if I have an auto policy with Progressive or Geico and I get in an accident and they raise my rates, oh, let me pick up the phone and call XYZ Insurance. They won't know about my recent accident. Wrong. It's going to show up on your CLUE report. So if you're a landlord and you've got this policy with whoever, ABC Insurance, State Farm, Allstate, First Insurance, and you have a $1,000 deductible, and you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to let insurance take care of it so that I can take care of this $4,000 claim, okay? As your agent, I'll explain to you the consequences, but I do what my client says. They say, hey, Jamie, I want to turn the claim in. There's 4,000 damages. My deductible's 1,000. I want my $3,000. Well, that insurance company at your next renewal may decide, guess what? We don't want to do business with you anymore. Mm. Or you turn in a second claim, you turn in a $4,000 claim, and then you turn in a $3,500 or an $8,500. The actuaries and the underwriting managers are going to sit there and say, okay, we're starting to notice a repetitive loss history here. And this person is treating their insurance policy like a bank account, not a catastrophe policy.
Right.
And again, I'm not advising not to turn claims in. When things happen, we need to turn claims in. But it's not a maintain your property and fix your property because you don't want to pay for it policy. It's to protect you for catastrophic things. And that's just my opinion.
It's interesting that there is a sort of a database. I'm sure many of the listeners, I didn't know this until I talked to you, that it was sort of your history on insurance in the insurance world. And so they can view, you know, your risk, you know, how yeah. risky someone is to insure them. So that's interesting. But let's talk specifically about Hawaii for a second, because you and I do business in Hawaii and yeah. we're on Maui. You know, the wildfires in Kula and Lahaina happened August 8th. And there's so many disasters going on. And so I know the insurance policies in Maui, in Hawaii, and then we'll zoom out even more in the US are just, you know, they're just kind of going crazy here. How do you think all of this, like, what are you seeing in the insurance industry that the disasters in Hawaii, how is that affecting the Hawaii market specifically from what you're seeing?
So there's two schools of thought. This is what I was told by one of my underwriters. Okay. We've both been here long enough. We remember the beautiful sugar cane here in Maui.
Yeah. Okay. Of course.
I was either, you know, when I first moved here, I never heard about them or it just wasn't front and center. I don't recall there being issues with wildfires while sugarcane was still being grown. Okay.
Hmm.
So what the corner office, New York CEO types, you know, the top dogs of the food chain in the insurance business are trying to wrap their head around with markets like Hawaii and Florida and the Texas coast, right? All the high risk markets. They're trying to figure out right now if this is a temporary situation or if this is the new way forward. And I don't think anyone has, you know, a firm grip, right? So right now, if you have a coastal home in Florida that's more than 5, 10, 15, 20 years old, for an average home and, you know, 1 to 2,000 square foot home, think of just your grandmother's house that she retired in outside of Tampa or outside of Miami, right?
Right.
What may have cost $2,000 to $3,000 a year for insurance 5, 10 years ago, my understanding, don't take this to the bank, is that's now a $10,000 to $20,000 policy.
Wow.
Okay. Because of repetitive hurricanes and losses. No matter what the insurers do, and this is auto, home, business, they have not figured out a way to collect enough premium in the state of Florida and other high-risk markets, A, to keep writing policies there. People right. like to demonize insurance companies, and I get it. But just like your local restaurant, let's say that a local diner, you know, that's family-owned, mom, dad, couple kids, let's say they have $500,000 in sales and they sell breakfast, lunch, and dinner, burgers, you know, typical diner food. All right. And they have 500,000 in sales, but they have 600,000 in expenses. And it's been that way every year for 3 to 5 consecutive years.
Right.
How long can that diner stay in business with a 10 to 20% net loss? And the simple answer is they can't.
Right.
Right. They would have had to raise prices in that first year. So the insurance industry is no different than any other business. They want to pay out 50 to 60 cents on the dollar in claims. They have to pay some agent commissions. They have to pay their brick and mortar expenses, salaries of underwriters, you know, buy cases of paper, computer software, security software. A great, great year for an insurance company. For every dollar they collect, they pay out 95 cents in all expenses and they keep that 5%. Anything more than 5% is gravy. But when you're collecting a dollar in premium and you're paying out $1.03, $1.05, or $1.15,
right?
That's where it starts to get really tough. So for the people that have never had claims or aren't in these areas, they don't get it, but it's all driven by the reinsurance market, period.
Yeah. So, I mean, you and I both know the policies going on in Hawaii right now, you know, I'm sure there's some non-renewing going on. I'm sure there's some carriers pulling out. I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff happening. And I know, like, for example, you know, the build that Mike and I did, Paradise Ridge, I mean, we're not talking specifics yeah. about it, but just going, you know, if the projection was X amount of dollars, I'm sure next year's policy is going to be higher. I'm sure of it. I mean, it just makes sense on yeah. the face of it. Is that what you're seeing across the board?
So we're seeing 25, 30, 35% increases from our personal lines insurers. So the good news is if you have a $1,000 or $2,000 policy, yeah, we don't want to see it go up, but it doesn't cause you to move out of your house, right?
Right, right.
We have not reached the Florida statute. I mean, if you read any articles or just search insurance in Florida, you'll see stories about those on fixed incomes that,
right.
you know, where are they going to come up with the extra 10, 20 grand a year for the insurance? Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
What we're seeing on large commercial property, specifically frame. Okay. There's always only been a certain number of insurers that are willing to cover frame.
Buildings. What does that mean? Frame.
So stick frame made of wood and
made
other,
of wood. Okay.
Yeah, correct. So masonry, joisted masonry would be brick walls,
okay,
with wood truss roof, and then fire resistive would be anything that's 5 stories or higher. It may or may not have sprinklers, but you know, if there's a fire in a 5th floor condo in a fire resistive unit, basically it won't spread to the other units. It won't burn the building
gotcha.
Down.
So it it's all dependent on how it's built, what it's built with, and how it's built. Okay.
I mean, rates are still going up for the other construction types, okay? But frame in particular, in lieu of the Lahaina fires, is getting killed. So I'll give you an example. Our two predominant markets that wrote frame commercial buildings, like AOAO condominium property, before the fires, we had carriers that would look at one property and say, okay, there's $100 million worth of insurance here. That's how much it would cost at $300 or $400 a square foot to insure all these buildings.
Sure.
That's the replacement cost. Okay. They would take the entire account. One insurer would take the entire account.
Okay.
Since the fires, those two insurers have raised their hand and said, hey, we will only take the first $10 million of this $100 million account. And then we're going to go out to the market and we're going to purchase layers in $5 and $10 million increments. So they're approaching a bunch of other insurers and they're getting those other insurers to participate. Now, if there's a $10 million fire, the primary carrier that I just mentioned that will mm-hmm. only do $10 million of insurance, they're on the hook for that full 10 million. So it's still not a good day for them. But all the other layered carriers, as the value of that claim increases, those layered carriers will get dragged in.
Okay.
So we're seeing associations that are frame construction that were insured by certain insurers. Let's say that association was paying 150 or 200,000 a year, which divided by 100 units isn't that bad. It sounds like a lot of money to the listeners, but in heavy commercial insurance, that's what these things cost. Some of these frame construction associations are going from 100, 150, 200 to well over $1 million. And it's because of the lack of capacity of the primary insurers and the cost of talking any of the layered insurers to taking on risk post-fire in Hawaii.
Right. Interesting. So they're basically spreading the risk instead of just them taking it, you know, the original 100 million policy. This is really interesting how you're seeing the insurance companies position, and now of course associations are having, I'm assuming they're having to raise their condo fees, for example, or their HOA fees. So that's, I'm sure that's what's happening. So it's for these owners, they're not just seeing increase on their own policy. They're seeing increase in policies resulting in higher condo fees or higher HOA fees. Yeah.
And by the way, one crucial point of this that I didn't talk about is the replacement cost, right?
Okay.
So before the fires, you know, $300, $325 a square foot, just in general for homeowners, commercial property, anything that was property that needed insured in general, depending on the construction. Now, a super high-end custom home, those are always going to be $1,000 square foot. I'm not talking about that stuff.
Right.
I'm talking about condo complexes, warehouses, my house, your house, whatever it is. Okay. With the increased cost of construction and the future, what we call demand surge, that's going to be put in this state. In other words, there's about to be a major rebuilding. So we're going to have a shortage of men and materials, and the cost of whatever men and materials are left is going to be increased. So that's another driving factor to the higher rates, both in personal insurance. I had a guy call me yesterday, bless his heart. You know, he's on a fixed income. He wants to save money. His house is insured for $700,000 with insurance company A. He says, hey, Jamie, give me a quote. Try to save me some money. Okay, I'll try. At the lowest replacement cost that I'm allowed to use post-fires as an agent, my replacement value was $1.3
million. Wow.
So I shared with him, number one, you're underinsured. Number two, unless you're willing to insure the house for 1.3, I can't even touch it. So either stay underinsured and keep your current policy.
Right.
Or pay more and join me, but that's okay. Those are the conversations that I have to have right now.
Wow. This is tough. Do you think this is the worst of it, or you think it's going to get worse still?
I heard a senior agent in my office comment that he's never seen anything like this. And hey, to the listeners out there, I'm speaking specifically, you know, to the Hawaii market. If there's any listeners in Florida, I feel like this shock and awe type situation that we're just getting now in Hawaii is ongoing in Florida. And you guys had this a couple years ago, post building collapse. Until the equilibrium of the supply and demand levels out, right now, we don't have enough markets that are going, man, we've always wanted to do business in Hawaii. We think it's a low risk state and we want to go out there and charge X for Y, right?
Right.
We're not seeing that right now. We're having carriers leave our market, not join our market, which means those that are left, doesn't mean they can charge whatever they want, but they kind of have to in lieu of the fires. Are we or are we not a new high-risk wildfire state? Or was this a one-off event and it's never going to happen again? That's the debate.
And I don't know if we're going to solve that anytime soon, and only time will tell. Yeah.
Right.
Wow. Well, Jamie, is there anything else that we didn't cover?
That's the broad stroke of it. I wish I had better, and there's some people, these insurance companies are crooks and blah, blah. I've been on the front end of this claim situation. I've turned in dozens of claims. Our agency alone, Insurance Associates, we as an agency have over $100 million in claims, and we're hearing nothing but stories about full policy limit claims. So to your listeners and to those that don't like insurance, okay, get with a good agent, whether it's a captive or independent, right? So Allstate guys back on the mainland, they only write with Allstate. State Farm guys only write with State Farm, but they do a good job in the markets that they serve.
Right.
I'm an independent broker, meaning I represent multiple insurers, whoever's left, right?
Right.
So even though this is about property, I insure scuba boats. I insure downhill biking companies. I insure restaurants. I insure houses, cars, and landlord policies, right? So as a broker, I would always encourage folks to find yourself an insurance technician that really wants to be a student of the industry. And that's what I've tried to do throughout my career.
Very good. Very good. No, that's wonderful. So I know you write policies in Hawaii, but if somebody wants to get a hold of you, whether they're in Hawaii or even on the mainland and want to have a chat with you, how would they do that?
Absolutely. My phone number here in Hawaii is 808-633-6082. My email address is Jamie, Jamie, at insuringhawaii. That's Insuring. So Jamie at insuringhawaii, not insurance Hawaii, insuringhawaii.com.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Jamie, you may know that in my podcast, I always have a call to action for all of my listeners. I really like it when people educate themselves, but then you need to do something with it. You've already alluded to the call to action, which is great. Regardless of where everybody's listening, whether you're in US or Canada, and if you happen to be in Hawaii, Jamie said it already. You've got to have that awkward conversation with your local insurance agent. And you've got to keep yourself educated on what's going on in your local markets. So that's your call to action. Thanks again so much, Jamie, for joining me today. You've been great at
Absolutely, my
explaining all
pleasure.
of this. Wonderful.
Anytime. Any of the listeners out there, if I talk to you, great. If not, I hope you learned something. And best of luck with your life as a landlord.
Thank you. Let me know, for all you listeners out there, let me know your comments and questions by emailing me learn@mylifeasalandlord.com. As you know, questions and comments create the next podcast and resources. Also, if you know of a really great guest that I should have on the show, there is a podcast guest application on the website as well. I'm always looking for dynamic guests, especially intellects like Jamie, to bring value to all of you. And don't forget the resources on the website, like my blackout bingo cards, to continue your landlord education. Check out My Life as a Landlord for more details. Thank you one more time to Jamie.
My pleasure. Everybody have a great day. Aloha.
Yeah, join me next week, everybody, for episode 65. Many of you have asked about renting out your rooms in your house and how that works. Next week's guest is going to tell us. Join me next week to learn about house hacking roommate style with guest Matthew Greenewalt. I'll see you there.
Thanks for joining us this week. For all the show notes and resources, check out mylifeasalandlord.com. Want to invest further in your landlord education? We've got a toolbox for you, wherever you are in your journey. Make sure you follow the podcast on the platform you're listening on. Thank you again for joining me, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury, in this episode of My Life as a Landlord. I'll see you next time.